Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. I am Brandon. I am in an apartment in Brooklyn, and 1.6 miles away in another apartment in Brooklyn is Josh.
Hello, Brandon. How are you?
Have you ever done the math on actually how far away our apartments are?
I have. I love sometimes pulling it up in Google Maps. You know, you put it in and then you can gauge exactly how far it is. You've gone so far, you know, how much time you have to live. Yeah, I don't have a lot of things to occupy my brain, right? I don't have a lot of
looking at Google Maps is like the new just flipping through the dictionary, I think. A way to stimulate the brain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like one of those like gem games people play in the subway, you know? So people just look at Google Maps.
So I guess let me try this segue here. Speaking of distance, you're actually bridging the gap between yourself and me in our head-to-head $50 cup.
Right. I'm doing it like one point at a time, right?
Yeah, we have excruciatingly close head-to-head matchups the last few weeks. And this week, game week 14, it actually came down to the BPS distribution among Liverpool defenders.
Yeah, so I'll lay out the scenario here. I had a pretty good Saturday. Not great, ultimately, but rather good. And I knew I had a 15-point lead on you, all things being equal. We both had Liverpool defenders. You have Nathaniel Klein. I had Martin Skrtel. And so I thought, well, that's probably going to end up being a wash or not enough to make a difference. And you had Ozil and Andre Ayew. So I just needed Ozil and AU to not get 15 points combined.
Right. Yep.
So what was it, like 33 minutes into the Arsenal match, Ozil scores.
Golazo.
Pretty good goal, actually.
Yeah, nice little dink.
Yeah, it might have almost been a pass. I mean, I guess it was a shot on goal, but Giroud was right there too in case it was
strange how he dinked it to the far post. You often see a dink just in, straight ahead or to the near post.
It was one of those great slow motion goals where there's nothing anybody can do. Like they all can just see it rolling towards the goal, but it's too late to actually do anything about it.
Yeah.
So he gets that goal, and because he's Ozil, you know, if he gets attacking points, he's on 3 bonus points like right away.
He's the Eden Hazard of this season. That's absolutely the way it worked with Hazard all last year.
Very true. So because of that, I'm thinking I am like kind of screwed here, you know, like. I mean, one goal in the 30th minute against Norwich, and then, you know, it's very possible that AU gets something here.
Yeah, or presumably Arsenal is going to score at least 2 more goals, and Ozil will have a piece to play in one of them. And then it is game, set, match. Bit of bang, bit of boom.
And what I was not expecting was, I thought, if anything, the Liverpool game might be a wash or a slight benefit in my favor, because Skrtel has been picking up more points than Klein, you know, week in and week out.
Skrtel is basically wearing a paper Burger King crown, but he's scratched out BK and put BPS on it.
He is really, I think his bonus points have actually gotten pretty high so far in the season. I think he might have reached double digit bonus points by now. Let me see if I can pull it up here. So Skrtel has a 12-point lead on all the other Liverpool defenders in the season, which is a little higher than I would have expected. And he has picked up only 6 bonus points in the season. So
are you serious?
Way over the top.
Well, yeah. I've really overinflated it.
So Skrtel picks up a yellow card. And you know, anybody who plays Fantasy Premier League knows the second you get a yellow card, it is almost impossible to rack up bonus points.
Yeah.
You could score like a hat trick and assist 3 goals and you might be in like 1 bonus point. Like a yellow card it's incredible how powerful it seems to be in terms of destroying your bonus points. So I knew I was screwed in that regard, and then slowly as the game was on, there, you know, with that tracker we talked about earlier on a new PLA.net, you get these real time stats on you know who the points leaders are at that point. So
I think Klein stipulates on the a new PLA site that there is a 0.435 second delay, so it's nearly real time.
Nearly real time, and so it looked like we might be heading for a tie.
I would have taken in this case because I had such a mountain to climb on Sunday.
Yeah, everything had to break right. I mean, that if that Norwich goal doesn't happen, you're on another point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very tight.
If Klein was really frustrating to watch. Jordan Ibe was just eating up all the possession on the flank on the right hand side, and Klein, I still expect him to do something in the next month, but he is a pale comparison to how he played with Southampton last season, where he was the most active person on the right-hand side of the field. And yeah, you don't see him getting forward nearly as much.
Yeah, it's really Alberto Moreno on the left who's picked up the slack there.
I'll tell you one other thing.
3 bonus points.
I can't look at Nathaniel Klein without thinking about SpongeBob SquarePants for some reason. He looks like a SpongeBob SquarePants character to me.
Really? Why do you say that?
I don't know. So there's just something about his face.
Really?
There's something about
his face. That's madness.
It is madness. I think Nathaniel Klein actually lives in a pineapple under the sea.
He does have a very plain face. Like, he looks like a cartoon. There's no character in his face. It's very flat.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just runs down that right-hand side of the field going, Nick, 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 Nickelodeon.
And I can see he has very dark eyes, so there's like a little bit of Uncanny Valley thing going on there, too, where he doesn't seem entirely real.
So we could be uncovering some sort of like cyborg conspiracy
within the
Premier League.
You don't think the woman from Ex Machina is Alberto Moreno, do you?
Well, it's a fair question. It's a fair question. We'll save it for the next episode.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, so you've basically laid it all out there, and as we saw on the ANUPLA real-time stats site, Klein was neck and neck with James Milner for 1 or 2 BPS through all of the latter stages of the second half. And then 15 minutes after the final whistle, miraculously, Dejan Lovren ekes in there like in the Kentucky Derby and steals a bonus point away from Klein, and Klein gets nothing.
Can you walk me through your emotions as when this happened?
Well, listen, if you want to talk about my emotions in game week 14, I'd say buckle up, because I've got a lot of things that I need to say.
All right.
But in that very moment,
You were just like, whatever. You've gotten this far.
It was kind of
terrible week.
It was kind of bittersweet to think that a tie was in the cards between you and I and head to head. And I frankly wasn't too dissatisfied to lose the tie instead of a loss. Because I will only be satisfied if I beat you.
That's true. And
there is a lot of, and all you FPL managers will know exactly what I'm talking about, where there's a lot of strategy when it comes to approaching the emotions that go on during the weekend. And you have to make some real hard, fast decisions. Am I going to embrace these emotions? Am I going to fan this flame? Or am I going to put this in a little compartment off to the side and probably snap at somebody at work 3 days later,
right,
because of this BPS. Because
the tension, it's like winding a watch, right? The tension's got to go somewhere.
Yeah. So I mean, those emotions with the BPS with the Liverpool game sort of paled in comparison to Saturday and watching what happened to my transfer situation.
Right.
Going into game week 14. I decided, based solely on one goal that Sergio Aguero scored the week before, that I was going to get Aguero into my team.
Uh-huh.
And we talked a lot.
To be fair, you know, the player you brought out in your midfield had not been performing very well the last several weeks.
Yeah, right. So listen, we can think about this one of three ways. I dropped Kevin De Bruyne to bring in Aguero. The other option would be to drop Alexis Sanchez to free up the cash.
Right.
So in the process of dropping De Bruyne and Graciano Pelé, I bring in Aguero and I bring in Dele Alli. Dele Alli gets a fifth yellow card and he's out for the week. So there I have to bench one of my transfers.
Now, how do you feel? I mean, because you... Was this a move that could only be made? You had like 0.1 million or something. Were you that worried about the price rise that you had to make it that day? I feel like a Saturday transfer is almost always a transfer that backfires.
I could have afforded to make the Aguero transfer had I waited a couple days. I mean, right now, what do I have in the bank? Right now, I have 0.7 million in the bank.
Oh, wow.
So
it's a huge error.
Yeah. but right at that very moment, I had this I mean, to use a pun, I had this surge for Sergio Aguero, and I felt this. It's got to be
great,
him.
Great pun.
So I just felt like I'm going to make this transfer. Everyone is going to make this transfer. Do it now. Make some cash while you can.
Okay.
So and I that would not have changed had I waited for another week. I still would have made the same transfers. I probably still would have brought Dele Alli in, knowing he was on a red. I was happy to bench him.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Yeah, I guess. The way your team's set up, you could afford to bench him for a week. And had you seen what Sanchez did at midweek,
right,
in the Champions League, it would have been very hard to bring in. You would have kept Sanchez, right? And you know, what did he have? Two goals and an assist.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, based on the evidence I had, okay. So one of three options, right? Option number one, based on the evidence I had, Sanchez will play hell or high water, and he is explosive. Granted, he's been playing every game. He's been playing 90 minutes. He's been threatening injury, but Kevin De Bruyne has also been playing every game. He's been playing 90 minutes all these games, and most of these games recently, he's been chasing them. That team has looked a little bit out of shape, and he's not been performing. So because I'm bringing in City cover with Aguero, De Bruyne is the first to go. Now, you're watching these games on Saturday, and who's performing? Kevin De Bruyne. He gets a goal and two assists, 3 BPS. Now, your classic FPL manager is going to sit there and stew and make the life of the other bar patrons a living hell during this game.
Uh-huh. So like with like sighs and like,
yeah, just muttering fucking bullshit under your breath and all that stuff.
Right.
And also you as that FPL manager are not going to enjoy watching those games.
Right.
So option one is just to accept that it's the luck of the bounce. It was just bad luck. You didn't necessarily make a bad decision, but this is the way it is. You can't let it shade the way you play the game or the way you watch and enjoy the Premier League.
So
that's the positive.
So you didn't react at all then. You didn't do any of this muttering. You kept it all together.
You know what? The only thing that saved me from spiraling into a dark emotion was I knew that you were on a Stoke clean sheet and you were on an Everton clean sheet around what, like the 75th minute in those rounds. Uh-huh.
Yep.
And you were about to like just blaze ahead.
Uh-huh. And that, yeah,
I mean, I was in danger of almost losing like whatever 50-point gap I have on you generally in the game. And then within a flurry, you lose both clean sheets, and then
It happened within. I couldn't believe it. I mean, they were both actually. I could believe. I was annoyed, but I shouldn't say I couldn't believe it because I could believe it because I was watching the Everton game, and Everton stopped playing at halftime. They decided around the 40th minute that this was a game that they couldn't lose. And they were doing elaborate stepovers and fancy passing, and it was. I actually tweeted about it on our Twitter feed. I mean, it was like Delafeu was attempting Cristiano Ronaldo stepovers just out of boredom, as far as I can tell.
For all you FIFA 16 players out there, we've all seen this happen in the online drop in matches.
Yeah, it was. And so they knew they had this game sewn up. And Bournemouth, to their credit, came out in the second half and like they were just bossing them. It was crazy that they hadn't scored until the 75th minute or whatever it happened. And so they scored one, and the second they scored one, I thought, well, I could see a second one coming here too. And so that was really annoying, but I was sort of okay with it. There's a red card in the Stoke match. Fucking that troll.
Shawcross. He's more of an orc than a troll.
You're right. He's an orc who lives under, but he still lives under a bridge.
Yeah, that's fine. I accept
that. So he gets his red card, and I know that clean sheet's lost because, you know, Sunderland, even with their forward going on injured.
Jermaine Defoe.
Thank you. Even Defoe going down injured, I knew a goal was coming there. But what saved me though a little bit was this crazy lucky Everton goal right at the end.
Okay, and, so they cut away to the Bournemouth Everton match because it was still going on with the extra time. NBC mm-hmm. cut away to it after what game was I watching? I was watching the City Southampton game. So that game closes and they go to that game. And Barkley scores his goal, and I I couldn't believe Coleman got that assist. He just lost possession. He lost possession.
He kind of dribbled it. He was the one. He got in the box. You always get an assist for that. That is a sure assist.
Yeah. I can't argue that. But I mean, what dumb luck. What dumb,
and then I got a bonus point luck. Out of
what
it too.
What dumb fucking stupid luck. I just couldn't take it.
And so is that when you finally yelled at the bar, or did you keep it together even then?
I had to smile and at least count the good fortune that that old Jack Butland didn't get yet another clean sheet.
I got a text from your wife later that day actually too, and she asked why you said you came back from the bar with tears, like it was clear that like tears had dried on your face. You know that look when like a baby stops crying and they have like, you know, the tear face still?
Well, listen, I was raised in a family that's so masculine and so hardcore that if you in any rare occasion actually do shed eye water,
mm-hmm.
i.e. cry.
Salty discharge.
You are not allowed to wipe it from your face because that just amplifies the sign of your weakness.
Right. No, so, I've heard you say this many times before.
So that's why Lila, my wife, saw that I had been crying, because I'm forbidden from wiping tears away from my face.
So, okay. So in the head-to-head now, which nobody cares about but you and I.
Well, I need to finish my 3-point PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
So point number two, I could definitely take myself to task for this, and the writing was on the wall for this Sanchez injury. Okay, I'm not saying this is necessarily correct or incorrect, but this is another way you can look critically at my decisions. The writing was on the wall with Sanchez. We all knew that De Bruyne, even though he'd been chasing points for the last month, was due for a game like this. Maybe it was dumb luck, but I am willing to admit that there were some poor transfer decisions made. And we have discussed on this very podcast that it would be necessary to wait on Aguero because, of course, when he limped off, possibly injured again, that was when I got to point three of my three-step process where, oh my God, I've just blown up my fucking team for no reason.
Right.
Sanchez is out injured now. Aguero's out injured. My defense is still a total cluster.
I had to laugh a little bit when Aguero limped off. I mean, it was just so – I mean, like this season is all about – Sanchez is just ruining lives this season. It is absolutely – like he's – and it's on both – like you have him and it doesn't work out until it works out so comprehensively that everyone who doesn't have him is totally screwed. And then he's completely out of the picture again.
Yeah.
You know, and once again, you're back to being totally screwed if you have him.
Yeah, to continue on my fast food comparisons, he's a little bit like the Hamburglar in that way from McDonald's.
So I, on the last podcast, I made my transfers while the podcast was ongoing. And I have to admit, I'm pretty happy with how it worked out. I picked up 5 points for Seamus Coleman and 9 from Jamie Vardy. So
that's a total of 14 to take a 4-point hit. So you grossed 10 points.
Grossed 10 points. Yeah, perfectly reasonable and solidified my team long term. Now, because I brought in Vardy at this price, it's actually because a couple people were on Twitter were like, well, you know, why are you bringing him in now? Like, it's over. But I mean, until he stops scoring every game, it's not over.
How is it over? It's.
There's an argument developing that Vardy is a player who can be traded out, and we talked about this on earlier episodes of the podcast. You know, he does. The fixtures do get worse for Leicester; they get significantly worse in the coming weeks. So, you know, long term. But my point is, I have I've banked like no money on Vardy, so it'll be very easy for me to turn Vardy into whomever, you know, from here on out. I mean, maybe it probably could be a Gallo. And, you know, in the end, I actually I discussed possibly bringing in a Gallo, and that might have been the right move.
Yeah. Of all the things I said last week on the podcast, I regret my disdain of a Gallo the most, because he had one of those weeks, which you talked about it with Jamie Vardy or Harry Kane last season against Chelsea, or Jamie Vardy against Arsenal, where it was a game where you just decidedly realized it's the real deal.
Yep. I feel the same way. We'll get into this a little more later in the episode because we're going to talk about the Watford.
Yeah. So you win our head-to-head by 2 points, and now you've closed the gap. It's your 6 to my 8. Is that right?
Yep. So pretty tight.
Super tight. Speaking of tight, let's go to the Hail Cheaters Mini League, which you can still join. Go to alwayscheating.com and click that league tab. Where are we at with Hail Cheaters right now, Josh?
It's actually getting pretty tight up at the top of the league, Brandon.
It is very tight. Actually, there's a I didn't even notice this in, while we were creating the running order today, but we have a three-way tie at the top of the table. How incredible is that?
We do. I love Nabumbu. And
I think Colin, both of our voices cracked while we got so excited there. Like, oh, my God.
Colin Bothwell and I love Nabumbu are up in the top two. Are two of the top three. And then three times Captain Hazard, game week one, who we've talked about on earlier podcasts, is now in first place as well. Knocked in an 80-pointer this week.
Yeah, that is a great week for three times Captain Hazard, game week one. That just rolls off the tongue.
And just below is Sushant Garg. Hope I'm saying Garg correctly. And that's Pinky and De Bruyne, which is a pretty good name.
I do like that name. Very clever.
We notice he has two teams in the top 17.
Yeah,
Lana Del Rey is also a good team name, but I don't know how I feel about the two teams in the league situation.
Yeah, let's not look past Lana Del Rey. That is a fantastic team name.
Yeah.
But Sushant is all about diversification. He's trying to get the most bang for his buck. Now, Sushant, we should remind you that nobody wins anything in this league. So if it's all for bragging rights, good on you. You have some pretty killer teams going right now.
Yeah, go for it. I mean, sometimes the only one league per email address thing does seem a little antiquated, I will say anyway, right?
I wanted to give a special shout out to Cosmala 11, Richard Cosmala's team, who was the highest scorer in the Hail Cheaters League this week with 98 points. Can you believe this, Josh? He had Alderweireld with 9, Moreno with 9, De Bruyne with 16, Ozil with 10, Barkley with 13, Lukaku captain for 12, Vardy 9, Ighalo 12.
It's a really good team. You know, it's the thing about that team too is it's a really high. It's a great score. Everyone performed, but there's no one on that team that is a crazy player to have. You know, it's not like it's.
De Bruyne is the only one there that costs over 10 million.
I mean, you look at that team and like none of that, like often when someone's the highest scorer in a, you know, for the week or whatever, they took a crazy punt on somebody, you know, like they have some player who, you know, someone who like scored a hat trick for Sunderland or something, or somebody who, you know, like Wijnaldum a few weeks ago.
Right. Right.
Or somebody that, you know, now this year it's all about the triple captain, right? You know, like the highest scorer is almost always someone who triple captained Aguero or something like that. But
to William C in second place.
Yeah, that's in game week
triple
one.
Captain in game week one worked out for him. All right, so just a reminder, if you like the pod and you want to participate more, you can still join our mini league. Just go to alwayscheating.com and click that league tab, and we have an auto join link there for you. Now let's get back to game week 14 and talk about the football that we didn't actually get to talking about while I was griping for like a solid 20 minutes there at the start of the pod. So here we're going to pick out a couple key fixtures with some key fantasy assets, talk about how it went down, who to keep, who to drop. And we'll start with the whopper of a game, Aston Villa versus Watford, which Villa had to struggle to even make it 2-3 in the end with a Jordan Ayew goal. Now, Josh, you were looking earlier at the Villa stats, which are pretty damning fantasy-wise.
Yeah, they are pretty damning fantasy wise. I mean, it's what's interesting is how many years in a row this has happened for Villa. I mean, you know, famous club, you know, have won the Champions League, have won the league. I know, obviously, they haven't won either in about 30 years.
Yeah, they have the longest running stretch in the top flight of any team.
Is that true? I thought Arsenal had the longest running stretch.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's. I feel like that's something people throw around a little lightly, but nobody bothers to follow up on checking the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, we're going to find out about that on Twitter, I bet, about 10 minutes after this podcast goes up.
Put it on me, at BSK Broiler. I don't mind.
So it's a depressing situation for Aston Villa. I mean, outside of the fantasy world where they have this owner that wants to sell the club, and because of this, he basically refuses to inject any real talent into this team. I mean, they're a club in a big town in England, and you know, great history, and their signings. I mean, they made some creative signings this year, but these are signings of a team like they sign players like a team that is just getting promoted. You know, I mean. Jordan Ayew and Rudy Gustet, I mean, these are okay players, but these aren't the players that you know, when I first started following the league, they were at least competitive, you know, back in the Darren Bent years.
Yeah, and
this is like circa, you know, late aughts.
Right, and your dime store Jack Wilshire with Jack Grealish. I mean, that guy, sure, he's a fun character, but he's, I don't see him flourishing into a real dynamite Premier League player.
Yeah, it's just it's a tough time for that club. So I actually have a player on this team. I have Micah Richards. So I was pretty excited because they conceded early, as they have constantly this year. I mean, you know, and when I saw that it was Agallo, I just laughed. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's just the guy's on such a – it's not even a run. It's just – he's just good, apparently. He's just very good.
Well, okay, so I kind of regret what I said last week as we were saying, but you do look at like a large majority of the goals that Agallo scores or that Watford scores, they're all against the run of play or just the most slapstick goal mouth scrambles you can imagine.
He's been so lucky this year, but at some point, if someone is constantly in a position where they can capitalize on that luck, then
yep.
I guess it says something about their quality. I mean, you know, Wilfred Boney had a very Agallo style goal earlier today.
Yeah,
where Kevin De Bruyne had a shot that ricocheted off the post and basically fell right to a completely unmarked Wilfred Boney, who had just had to tap it in. Yeah. And I feel like that's happened with Agallo all year, where back passes keep falling to his feet, and you know, but there's something to be said for being so aggressive and being ready to take your shot when it happens. I mean, we all know the league is riddled with players who don't take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, and speaking on behalf of all of the managers who completely annihilated their fantasy teams to get Aguero in this week, I tip my hat to you, all you guys who stuck with Agallo.
Yep, I know, and who have an extra 7.5 million or whatever.
All right, so, but then Troy Deeney, you have to think about him too. Three goals in the last three games for him. He started off really slow this season, but it looks like now he's come to collect, as predicted. Yeah, the classic championship talismanic figure.
So four goals and one assist in the last five games. 6-2, 8-6, and 11 from Deeney. I like Deeney, and I like this Watford team. I'm not even mad. Whatever. I mean, I held on to Deeney for so long, and he came good basically the week I finally got rid of him.
Yeah.
But you know, it's all good. It's all good, Deeney.
Now the big concern for Watford defenders is Aurelio Gomez took a nasty blow to the head. I don't know if you saw the replay of this, but he got like a shin or something to the head, and he immediately signaled to the sideline that he needed to be taken out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen any injury reports on what his prognosis is.
He's got the,
like, is his head totally clean off at this point?
He's got the yellow arrow. Mm. So we never really know what we're getting with the yellow arrow.
So how are you feeling about Micah Richards now? I mean, he's a good bench defender, I suppose, for you in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would, if I were wild carding anytime soon, I would not have him on my team. But he's all right. You know, it was a great goal. I don't know if you saw a replay of the goal. It was an excellent goal.
It was a fantastic goal. Yeah, well taken header. Rudy Gestedt would have been completely proud of that one.
And he's playing his ass off. So I'll give that to Micah Richards too. I mean, he's like he's the captain of the team. He's running around, you know, trying to get everyone to play their best. The team is bad, and he's one of the few bright spots in that team. So it's kind of fun to have him on my team.
Yeah,
the fixtures are not great for them going forward. They actually get a little bit better around Christmas time.
Yeah,
where they have Newcastle, West Ham, Norwich, Sunderland, Crystal Palace. So that's those are decent fixtures.
Yeah,
away to Southampton and home to Arsenal the next two matches. I'm definitely not planning to start them.
I'm upgrading Aston Villa on the dumpster fire scale. They've gone beyond tire fire, beyond garbage fire, beyond dumpster fire, and now they're basically just a fart that you light. That to me is how bad this team is.
Are they? Is there anybody you'd want in this Aston Villa team? Is there anybody that even intrigues you? I mean, they're all so cheap. The most expensive player on the entire team is $5.7 million.
Yeah, actually, there is one guy. I really like the way he plays, Carles Gil. Mm-hmm. He plays in the midfield. He's actually 4.7 with 0% ownership. But he is a really creative midfielder, and he looks to have some intent going forward. But an expressive, creative player like that, it's kind of
I can't believe it says 0%. It's not even 0.1.
I don't know if I've ever actually seen that before. Usually guys like that find their way. I guess it's the Westwood effect.
It's like not even Gil's family owns Gil.
No. No, I think out of deference to him, they're just pretending that the FPL game doesn't exist this season.
Jordan Ayew looks okay sometimes. He's got one of the worst pictures. I'm pulling him up right now. It's poorly cropped, and he looks like a pirate a little bit too.
Does he have a patch over? So, oh, I see that. It looks like he's wearing earrings, but that's actually like his earlobe sort of.
Oh, I guess poking out he has earlobes that look like pirate hoop earrings.
Yeah, I think his brother Andre is a little better looking than he is.
Yeah, and a far better player, I think too.
He does pass the SpongeBob test though. Sorry, Klein. All right, well, what about Watford? So Gomez is a concern, but their fixture's coming up. They're home to Norwich, away to Sunderland. Two pretty plush fixtures there.
Yeah, and the fixture is coming up after – this is a problem that I think I've had a little too much this year, which is that I'm always looking – like I'm trying to plan for 6 to 8 weeks as opposed to 3 weeks. If I see these things as in 3 week windows, then bringing in players like Agallo makes more sense. But I'm like, well, I guess Vardy long term is probably the better move.
It's a little bit like
which it may still be.
Yeah, like how you approach work in the office. You're sort of always trying to get yourself to inbox zero. Like as soon as I answer these emails, I'll be done, and I can just sit in this chair and stare out the window for the rest of the day. And that's how you are sometimes.
Chat the rest of the day.
Yeah, right. And you look at your FPL team like that. At some points, like as soon as I just get this guy into my defense, then I'll be set, and I won't have to make another transfer until 2016.
Yeah, and so the situation right now, and by the way, it's crazy to look at the next few fixtures and realize that once we get to game week 20, we're actually in January. Yeah. Like, I think I'm still in denial that we're in the first week of December.
I think a lot of managers will be happy to see this season go once it's all said and
done. Yeah, I know. I'm in that camp. A short 24 weeks left. So they have two really enticing fixtures at home to Norwich and away to Sunderland. And then they are it's a really rough run for the next month or so. Really, they play Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs, Man City, Southampton. A little respite with Swansea and Newcastle, and they play Chelsea, Spurs, and then Man United a couple weeks after that. So, but their run in is actually pretty good. They have Norwich, Aston Villa, and Sunderland in three of the last four fixtures. So if you're starting to plan for game weeks 35 to 38, keep your eye out for some Watford players.
I'd be interested to see the game plan, though, of somebody who would bring in Agallo for game week 15 against Norwich and run him out for two games and then sell him. It's or Deeney even. I mean, Deeney's kind of got the hot hand as well. It's sort of too short a span of time to bring in cheapo players like that because, like you've said many times on the pod, what do you do with them at that point? It's hard to get them out of the team.
Yeah, and which is typically the case. I mean, with a player like Agallo, clearly he and Jamie Vardy are never going to go a game without scoring again. I mean, they may score every game the rest of the season. We can't discount that possibility.
Yes, the law of averages would say obviously Vardy is not going to go 20 games in a row, but why not?
That goal against Man U was absolutely beautiful.
Fuchs, man, that pass was out of control. He had no right to play that pass.
That was beautiful. I was actually at the gym when I watched that, and I actually pumped my fist at the gym.
I don't think David De Gea he didn't even realize what was going on. Like 1 second, he had all this space between him and the Leicester offense, and then suddenly he's set upon by Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, it was Vardy actually. I mean, De Gea squared up pretty well for Vardy too. It was a really nice finish from Vardy. I mean, he had to kind of. We've definitely seen players miss in that situation, and yeah, Vardy kind of clearly knows high into the left.
Yeah, he knows that a majority of the battle is just hit the target.
He's a great because he kind of has. He's a little bit like Theo Walcott, actually. He's uh-huh. got you know, Walcott has that. I mean, I think he's actually a little more aggressive than Walcott, which makes him arguably a better player, at least this season.
Yeah.
But he seems to have the same speed that Walcott has. And Walcott is also a great finisher. And so, you know, Walcott is, you know, he's got great speed and he's a great finisher. And so that's the whole thing with Walcott is if you have a team that can take advantage of that, or a team that has, you know, defenders that can get beat on the flanks, then Walcott can torch you for three or four goals. We saw that in, you know, the last game week of the season last year.
Right.
And it seems like Vardy is the same way, where he just knows how to get around a defense. And, yeah. And then once he gets around them, he's just so clinical when it comes to, you know, finishing.
I'm very curious to see, and I guess you won't see a huge percentage of managers totally bail on Vardy when he finally blinks, because I'm sure there are a lot of ghost teams that have Vardy at this point. But I'm wondering, like, if people are just going to instantly jump ship when he blanks.
Probably, because his ownership is so high.
But the point I was going to make there was, even if he does blank and the streak will not continue, he will score more goals this season. And he's a better bet than Jordan Ayew at this point.
Okay, so let's look at – I know we're getting off track here a little bit, but just to finish this thought. So let's look at Vardy. We've got – can you pull him up in your – you got him there?
I got him right here. I'm looking at his toothy grin, his baked bean teeth.
So you look at – so if you look at his pictures, Swansea away, possible captain option there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That defense is garbage. Yeah.
They are garbage. Chelsea at home, I would also think that's a pretty, I wouldn't captain him there, but I would definitely keep him for that fixture. I mean, there's no reason to be scared of Chelsea at this point.
No.
Everton away. Everton just shipped 3 to Bournemouth, so
yep, they're them. Shutting down.
Liverpool away, not a great fixture, but
they are a good fixture, and here's my theory. The way Jamie Vardy plays, whose system would he benefit most? He would fit so well into a gegenpress style. Mm-hmm. He will show up and be in the shop window for Jurgen Klopp. He will be the who's the Burnley striker they brought in?
Danny Ings.
Yeah, he can replace the.
Hey, you know, Ings looked good before he was injured.
Yeah, I don't want to slag off Danny Ings at all, but
yeah,
you know,
he's like 21 too. He's like 8 years younger than Vardy.
Are you serious? He looks he's about 40 years older than Vardy.
Ings is crazy young, way younger than he looks.
Well, anyway, clearly I have no idea what I'm talking about. Moving on, after Liverpool, Vardy's going to be at home to Man City.
Which is not a great fixture, but then the next fixture is home to Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. So you can't drop him for Man City because you want to play him at home to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And then Spurs away, like whatever. Spurs, they often ship stupid goals. Aston Villa, Stoke, Liverpool at home, you know, I mean – he might be in Liverpool by then, good for your theory. And then I guess you've got Man City and Arsenal away in game weeks 25 and 26.
It's a very spotty. Like, you can see the holes where he can get points, but I can see how this fixture lineup is kind of intimidating for Vardy owners.
But I could see myself not actually getting rid of Vardy until game week 25. I think there's a good chance that I'll have him for the next 9 game weeks.
Yeah. I mean, the options are if you can squeeze in Kane and Lukaku to replace him. But as we've talked about Watford, so Deeney and Ighalo, their fixtures become a nightmare after
much 2 weeks. Worse. Yeah. And I still, despite the fact that I think we're both sold on Ighalo at this point, or at least sold on the idea that Watford has a knack for scoring goals.
Yes.
I do think that that's a team that I could definitely see going cold at, you know, various times this year.
Yeah.
And we saw them, you know, we saw them when they played Arsenal, right? I mean, they really got outclassed in that match. Yeah.
But who are your other forward options? You've got Harry Kane. I mean, Pele may come into play at some point again this season, you have to assume. Yeah. Olivier Giroud, people sort of are poking him with a stick right now.
The problem, too, is that there are a lot of managers who bought Vardy early on. So they have him for 6, 6.1, 6.2. So if you – let's say that you want to be – like you, the problem is he's hard to bring back in. You know, if you bought him at six – if you bought him at $6 million, he's at $7.5 million now.
Yeah.
You know, you can sell – the sell-on value for him is $6.7 million. So you're going to lose $8 million, you know, $8 million immediately. And, you know, is it worth losing $0.8 million just – did I say $8 million? I meant $0.8 million, of course. You lose $0.8 million immediately, and then it's not worth it to turn that $0.8 million into Pelé. You know, or I mean, you're kind of stuck with Vardy, I think.
Yeah,
it's actually easier for me because I got him.
You'll get value for value if you sell him.
Yeah, so it'll be easy for me. I could bring him out and bring him back in at various times.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do that either. There's, I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's always a problem. There's always a a dam bursting somewhere else that has to be solved. I mean, getting rid of Jamie Vardy is not on my radar at all now.
Right. Okay. So that's our succinct analysis of the lingering Jamie Vardy question.
Of Aston Villa Watford.
I'm sure we'll come back to it at some point. Okay. So the next fixture we're going to talk about is Bournemouth v Everton, the 3-3 late drama. Where do you stand on the argument that Bournemouth only scores that goal because Everton's fans stormed the field?
No, Bournemouth scored that goal because Tom Cleverley is a wuss or wimp or whatever word you want to use.
Yeah,
it was pathetic.
He wasn't up for the challenge.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I mean, that Bournemouth
wouldn't even be in that game if McCarthy hadn't had to get subbed out.
Yeah. And Bournemouth scored that goal right off of the kickoff that would have had to have happened regardless. I don't think that Barkley goal is the last kick of the game. And all that forward momentum off the kickoff, the referee playing at home for Bournemouth is going to let them see how that play unfolds. They score that goal, whether those Everton fans charge the field or not, I think.
Yeah, it was a wild goal. You know, I worked it out later. I actually think it cost me 2 bonus points because I think I would have had 2 for Coleman and 1 for Delafeu if that hadn't happened. So, yeah, still kicking myself a little bit of Delafeu. I mean, I know you got to play the long game a little bit. I was, you know.
He had a great game in the Cup of Cups today.
I know. He looks good. He looks so good. So I do think the goal, he's got it's Tadic syndrome. Like, you know, a huge game is coming for him.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's just right now all the points are getting hoovered by Ross Barkley. But, you know, that's all right.
Yeah, and not a big price difference there. I mean, imagine the points you could be swimming in right now. Just think about it for a moment. I mean, think about it.
Don't think
about it.
Yeah, and then compose yourself and move on.
But
you can make an argument for having 2 Everton midfielders for sure.
I mean, we talk about this every week, but their unreal lineup of fixtures keeps rolling, where they're home to Crystal Palace, away to Norwich, home to Leicester, away to Newcastle. Then there are 2 home games to finish up that New Year's run, Stoke and Spurs.
This game has to stink for them because, you know, so Everton, if Everton had won this match, they'd be at 23 points, you know, only 6 off the top of the table, 4 points off one of the Champions League spots. And as we've talked about already, this is a year when a club that's not Chelsea is going to get that 4th Champions League spot. And they have this amazing run of fixtures. You just can't lose this game.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's like Arsenal tying against Norwich. If you have any designs on the top of the table, you can't be dropping points. I mean, if City is dropping points to Norwich, you have to be taking them. Otherwise, City is just going to steamroll you in the long run.
This is just, I mean, the Arsenal thing was just another example of why they can't win a title as long as Wenger's there, because he just won't. He only has 2 players at every position. And
he shoots all of his players with some sort of magical brittle bone ray gun. Yeah.
I mean, I'm an Arsenal supporter, but that was such a frustrating game. And so I might be a little extreme here. I mean, Arsenal could actually still win the league this year, but it is so frustrating that Olivier Giroud is clearly not at his best in this game. And because Arsenal refused to invest in any forwards this year, they had to bring on Joel Campbell, who's mediocre at best. I mean, Joel Campbell should be playing for Norwich, like him himself. You know, he should be on a mediocre to lower level Premier League team.
I mean, this is the season that Joel Campbell has been waiting for however long he's been languishing on that first team bench at Arsenal.
Yeah.
And he's got his chance. He scored his goal. He could basically pack up and go back to Costa Rica a happy man at this point.
That's right. So yeah, it was a frustrating loss for Everton, but it doesn't really
a draw,
I should say. It felt like a loss.
Yeah.
From a fantasy point of view, it doesn't really diminish their value.
No, you have to be loving Seamus Coleman right now.
I do. He actually could have had another assist in the match.
Yeah.
A goal that Lukaku just missed scoring a second.
And what now? Leighton Baines got onto the field today with the Cup of Cups.
Yep. So I'm feeling pretty good about this Everton team in general. So I'm rolling three deep right now with them. You have only one Everton player, right?
I just have Lukaku. But I guess to close the circle on this fixture, Bournemouth assets still stay away, even though you had a lot of guys like Stanislas, who fun player to watch. But, I mean, week on week, is he going to get you points?
No way. I don't think so, but he's really cheap. So if you need a cheap player, he's one to keep an eye out for.
This is ridiculous.
Or possibly one to bring in.
$4.2 million for a midfielder who gets you two goals.
I know.
It's incredible.
What a name, too. Junior Stanislas.
He sounds like I don't want to step on your toes, George R. Russell Martin, but he does sound like a Game of Thrones character, doesn't he?
He does.
All right, so Man City v. Southampton was the third game from Game Week 14 we want to highlight for a few reasons, many of which I've already mentioned. The De Bruyne double cross I have here in my notes, and he also scored two goals today, so of course that probably means he's going to blank in Game Week 15. he tells himself.
Mm-hmm.
But the big news is that David Silva is back in the equation.
Yeah, and he played in the Capital One Cup game today. Didn't really do much. Silva, the thing about Silva is he could be a differential, but Silva's real value is a week in, week out. You know, he's very consistent. I mean, so I don't know that you want to bring in Silva if you are trying to make up a lot of ground. Because
yeah, right. Like
he's huge hauls from him aren't that common.
Yeah, he's kind of a differential, but not because he's a long game player.
He plays a long con. Silva does.
So City's fixtures coming up. They're away to Stoke, home to Swansea, then they're away to Arsenal, Sunderland, Leicester, Watford. So their fixtures look great. My big concern is when Joe Hart is going to get back because. I don't have time with my defense. My defense is in tatters, and the longer Joe Hart is out, the longer I'm getting these crusty one-goal let-in returns from Wayne Hennessy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Are you a little worried about the head-to-head matchup now, Brennan, over the next couple of weeks? No. No, you're feeling good?
No, I'm feeling great.
Wow, okay, good.
Well, listen, Josh. I might look a little bit like a fish out of water right now, but I have a plan. I have a plan.
All right. Excellent. Or not excellent, maybe. Maybe that's bad. Bad for me. So the City Southampton fixture does, however, tie in with a question that somebody asked us on Twitter, at least it's tangentially ties in, which is, this is FPL Junior, who asks, who to replace Sanchez with, excluding Ozil and KDB? And then he suggests Coutinho, Bolasie, others. So this match is sort of interesting because one of the top options to replace Sanchez is KDB, if you don't have him already. What are some options that you are considering as somebody who also owns Alexis Sanchez?
Well,
and who has Ozil already, so you can't make the Sanchez to Ozil move.
Yeah, as we hinted at talking about Everton, Ross Barkley is obviously a huge option there, and he is on molten fire right now.
Mm-hmm.
In the last two weeks for Barkley, he's got 13 and 19 points. It's just insane.
Yeah,
that probably won't hold, but given their fixtures, that's an easy bet to make. I have Andre Ayew in my midfield, and he's just the opposite of steady, but he is always a potent threat when that Swansea team can actually get forward.
Right, and home to Leicester, you can't get rid of Ayew this week, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. Coutinho is a tough call because of his injury problems, but as we know from the tail end of last season and when he was actually performing on the field this season, he's a great player, and it could be his time.
He is – so apparently he's touch and go for tomorrow's Capital One Cup game. I think that Coutinho is a really interesting option, mostly because he seems like a really good fit for the style. For the Gegenpress. I don't know if it's a Gegenpress issue or if it's just I don't understand Gegenpress to the degree necessary to understand how well he fits into it, but it does seem like it's allowed him to flourish. And the Coutinho-Firmino combination looks great. I think they'll be okay with Sturridge too. We've talked about this in an earlier podcast, so we don't need to rehash too much, but it's unclear how Benteke fits into that kind of lineup. It almost seems like an almost strikerless formation is what's working best for them. But I think that so Coutinho, if he's touch and go for tomorrow, he's definitely fit for this weekend. And the next two fixtures are away to Newcastle, home to West Brom, away to Watford. He has, before his injury, he had three straight double figure point hauls, picked up 4 goals, 1 assist, and 9 bonus points, which is massive. I think so. I'm looking at Coutinho myself.
I am not a fan of Bolasie, and this is just totally a gut opinion, so take it for what it's worth. But he did this last season. He goes off on one game, and then you don't even see his face for a month. And that Crystal Palace team is slightly problematic. I mean, I dare say I totally called it with Johan Kabay. They scored 5 goals over the weekend, and he had nothing to do with any of them because they didn't have any real good dead ball situations.
It's just a tough call with that whole team because there are – I mean, they scored 5 goals in that game, and it's a weird – it's all these midfielders. You know, there's really no strikers in that team. I mean, Connor Wickham is like a piece of paper float. He's like he's like that paper, like the bag from American Beauty.
Yeah, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
He's just floating in the wind in the corner.
All right,
he actually racked up 2 assists insanely in that match.
Because they were probably using him as a backboard, a la like they were playing a game of horse in the driveway. I don't know. I didn't watch much of that game.
So I didn't either.
Sure how involved he was, but.
Through 14 weeks, though, he has no goals, and those 2 assists were the first 2 assists he had all season. So,
well, FPL Junior, here's my punt for you. Here's my hot take, I guess I should say. It's Christian Eriksen at 8.4 million. Get a load of the Spurs fixture list coming up. West Brom, Newcastle, Southampton, Norwich, Watford, Everton, Leicester, Sunderland, Crystal Palace, Norwich, Watford. And then only when you get to February 13th do they run up against Manchester City. So that is a pretty epic run, and that Spurs team is in great form. And this is around that time in the season where Eriksen usually starts to flourish.
Yeah, the player that I'm looking very seriously at, and this may you may fall over in your chair when I say this.
Good thing I'm sitting Indian style on the floor.
Is Eden Hazard.
Yeah, I've seen rumblings about this on the Transfer Hub Facebook page.
He's playing.
I get it. It's crazy talk, though.
I know that he will not be playing as a striker every game week. Had the best shot on goal in their fixture in the draw with Tottenham. We have said earlier this season that fixtures of a form don't matter, but I feel very nervous about not having a Chelsea player during a 4-week run that is Bournemouth at home, Leicester away, Sunderland at home, Watford at home. Now that's an incredibly great run of fixtures, and Mourinho is not a player that this season's been a little weird, but in general, like once they start rolling, I don't think we'll see a lot of rotation with this team. I don't think that Hazard's going to be on the bench anytime soon. And so if you don't want to bring in Hazard, you could look at a player like Willian, who is sort of an interesting option, but just not one that I think is a consistent enough fantasy asset to actually bring in. Fabregas looks like garbage. Pedro actually looked pretty good.
He did, though he's still skying balls about 20 feet over the crossbar.
Yeah, so Hazard is actually the player that I'm really – so Hazard and Coutinho are the two players that I'm looking at.
You know, maybe I'm just being devil's advocate, but is it crazy that everyone is still – we've been having this ongoing Chelsea-Hazard discussion for the first 14 weeks of the season, and they have proven nothing. They have done nothing.
But we have 3 full seasons of evidence before this season.
FPL manager has tried to rationalize this and bring logic into it this entire season. And what has happened? What has played out?
It's just, they're on a bad streak, but it's a talented team. I refuse to believe that this team will not be in the top 8 by the end of the season.
Yeah, you know, I expect that you're probably right in the long run. I'm just saying this now so I can be proven right. Though I will probably be proven wrong, I will say it now so I can be proven right.
I will also say if I bring in Hazard, I may even captain him this week, which would be a huge, huge punt. But I don't know. I just
– Go for it.
I like the way he
– Do it now. Do it now on the pod.
I thought he – No. I'm not ready to make the move yet because Coutinho's fixtures are almost as good and he's in better form, assuming that he's recovered from the injury. So we'll see. I'm just, you know, Bournemouth is a terrible defense. If Sanchez had not gone down, it would be very tempting to bring in as a 1 week punt, even Diego Costa for this fixture. But now we don't even know if Costa's going to start. I actually think he's going to start and come out like a house on fire the next game week.
Because Mourinho's going to work some sort of magic and turn the bib throwing incident into an advantage.
I think so. Although, I mean, Costa, you can't have Costa at this point, can you?
No. That's even more insane than Hazard. I mean, Hazard, okay, I can see your rationale there, but Costa, no. Loic Remy is healthy, and I see no reason why he doesn't start against Bournemouth.
I would love to bring in a Chelsea defender, that's for sure. Kurt Zouma, 5.4 million, started nearly every game week this, so he had like didn't start the first 2 weeks, he didn't start, and then he started looks like 12 of the last 13 game weeks, or 11 of the 12, I guess.
Yeah,
has picked up clean sheets in the last two fixtures, and it's very possible Chelsea could pick up clean sheets in three of the next four fixtures. I mean, I know that the defense has been sort of historically bad for Chelsea by Chelsea standards going into the season, but two clean sheets in a row, you know, so it's a, it seems like the defense at least is back on track. If the, you know, the attack isn't quite there yet, but they're, right, you know, it seems like the spine of that team is selling into place a little bit.
All right, more transfer conundrums coming to us on Twitter through our handle at Hail Cheaters. El Magico tweets at us, Coughlin out. Is it time to ship Bellerin out for a Spurs or Liverpool defender? Will Ozil's form continue with no Alexis? So there's some hard Arsenal questions being asked here. Bellerin, who was one of our favorite defenders last season, he kind of had a terrible game against Norwich. And now, as El Magico points out, they have no line of defense with Coughlin gone. And I don't see Flamini being a real brick wall in front of them. Should we get rid?
Well, I think you could, and I think that the Chelsea defense would be the easiest move to make. I mean, Bellerin is actually a little more expensive than Zouma, and I don't know. I'm feeling very good about this Chelsea defense. It seems like a good investment to me.
I would put the finer point on Spurs, as I was mentioning with Eriksen, their great upcoming list of fixtures, and you can get a heavy hitter defender for the same price tag as Kurt Zouma. Toby Alderweireld is still rising in value.
Yeah.
He is on 5.5 form points right now, and you can buy him for 5.5.
Yeah, and this is all to say, by the way, that I don't think there's any real urgency to get rid of Hector Bellerin. Their next fixture is at home to Sunderland, and the fixture after that is away to Aston Villa. So those are probably both. I'd be surprised if he didn't have clean sheets and possibly even one assist in those two fixtures.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm less worried about the Arsenal defense because even though Koscielny goes out, Coughlin is out, Koscielny gets replaced by, what's his name? Paulista Gabriel.
Yeah, Gabriel. Yeah.
And Gabriel's
a good player.
Yes,
yeah,
he's good. He's fine. I think that back line will be fine. You got Monreal, Bellerin, Mertesacker.
Even Callum Chambers is okay. I mean, I know he hasn't really played much this season, but he's serviceable.
Yeah, and you have one of the best goalkeepers in the league with Peter Cech. I think you're right to not panic, but if you really feel like it's imperative to get rid, yeah, Chelsea, Spurs, or Liverpool, they're all fine. I mean, it's kind of like six of one, half dozen of the other, right?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I guess Alderweireld is maybe, possibly the one to look at because I think he's probably the one that I would look at if I were bringing in a 5 million defender right now.
Yeah.
Alderweireld or Kurt Zouma.
Yeah. But the second part of El Magico's question, will Ozil's form continue with no Alexis? So the discussion that was had earlier in the season was how Alexis seems to play better with Theo Walcott.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have posited online that Ozil has a good connection with Olivier Giroud, so maybe we can see goals coming there.
You mentioned to me, I think on Twitter or somewhere, maybe we were texting or something, that you felt like once Alexis was out, you knew you weren't going to get any more points from Ozil.
Yeah, it was similar to that Man City-Liverpool game when Liverpool was running riot and then City started to charge back. But then when Aguero came off in the 60-odd minute, all the life came off the field with him.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way when Alexis came off the field. Ozil, he just needs players to play off of. I'm not the first person to point this out, but he's in this such a rich vein of form, and particularly with this Sunderland fixture coming up, why would you give up faith, at least this week?
Yeah.
Maybe wait and see how he does.
You have to be thinking about Captain Ozil this week, right? I mean, it has to at least be on the table. I know that Lukaku at home to Crystal Palace is a really strong option, but I guess this is
the first week in a while where I feel like an Everton captain is off the table for me.
Really? At home to Crystal Palace? I mean, that team is not that defensively solid.
Yeah, but much is made of Crystal Palace's away form, and how they're set up away from home is much better suited, and that's where you see them actually take teams apart.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we saw it against Watford, but yeah. I mean, this is an Everton team that they're, I mean, the defense is still a little shaky maybe, but the offense looks pretty solid right now.
Well, we'll get into this a little more when we get to the optimizer, but I see that being a cagey affair. So, I mean, just to get back to the Ozil with no Alexis question, I feel like it's a wait and see. If you have a bigger plan in your midfield, I don't think it's crazy to drop Ozil at this point. I mean, the Arsenal team could be in trouble with all these injuries.
Yeah, and I'm definitely thinking about bringing in Ozil myself. I don't have him right now, and the Alexis to Ozil move would be the simplest move. I still feel like I'm starting to be a little more concerned about where I am points wise, and I feel like I'm entering points chase, not even points chasing mode a little bit, but just.
Do you think you're reverting to a template?
Well, I mean, Ozil is a pretty template player at this point, and he's going to become even more of one as with Alexis gone, right? I mean, he's owned by 36% of the league already.
Yeah.
I mean, I think anytime you're above 30, you're a template player.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's as he should be.
Yeah.
You know, double figure returns in four of the last seven game weeks.
His assist streak was actually broken, though he was replaced by a goal. So
worked out okay.
It did work out all right. I guess that bleeds into the last question we have here from Twitter from Eric Grand Rapidian, and I believe this is our friend Eric who is in our private league. So shout out to Eric and Grand Rapids, eh?
Yes.
Eric says, are there any template players at risk of rotation during the busy holiday schedule? Speaking of planning ahead, or is it too early for that question? What do you think? Is it too early to start thinking about rotation happening around the busy holiday fixture list?
It probably is, just because so much can still happen until then. I mean, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, I guess there might be some more concern with City more than any other team because they run pretty deep, and you could see a player like Aguero maybe sitting out one or two of those fixtures, or at least coming off the bench. We were really worried about this last year, and then it really didn't happen. Like I feel like I almost never had a game week during the Christmas fixture list where all of my starters didn't play. Part of that is I went three strong with Chelsea almost the whole season, and they didn't take a game week off.
Yeah.
Any of the top players.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I haven't really actually started thinking about it, but I guess right now, because we're all dealing with these little niggly injuries that are happening to a lot of the guys on our squad, I'm more concerned about getting a healthy squad going into that holiday period than I am anticipating the rotation.
It would be great. See, this, it is a little, I'm a little frustrated because this week would have, if the Sanchez injury hadn't happened, I might have used this week to finally get rid of Ashley Westwood, who is just offering me no value at all as my fifth midfielder.
He is having a hell of a time on your bench, though. He's loving every second of it.
There's just really no, there hasn't been a time when I've had the luxury of not making a move. They're not making kind of an essential move elsewhere. And even just bring, I mean, there aren't a ton of options in that form. I guess Dan Gosling and Bournemouth is a possible player. But, you know, I just you want to have players who actually start. That's the only thing. You know, like, more than worrying about who's going to be subbed, because you just never know. You never know who's going to get a week off, right? It's they never reveal the stuff beforehand.
Right.
So you just have to worry about having enough depth to weather the storm.
Yeah. All right. So keep the questions coming to us at Hail Cheaters. And there's also an email form you can fill out at our website at alwayscheating.com. All right, Josh. So the only thing left to do is to optimize for game week 15. So will you join me, please, as we step into the Always Cheating Optimizer?
Let's do it. Let's step right in.
Please play that really awesome sound effect that we play every time we get into the Always Cheating Optimizer.
The Optimizer.
All right. So let's look at the upcoming fixtures, and we're going to try a little competition here, Josh, aren't we? I'm going to pick out a clean sheet, a guaranteed clean sheet. You're going to pick out a guaranteed clean sheet.
And we're also gonna pick a sub 8 million goal scorer.
Yes, we are. And then we're gonna meet back here next week, and we're gonna see who did better. But before we get to our picks, let's just run down the fixture list for game week 15 and say our piece. So where do we start?
Yeah, and when I get to my goal scorer and my clean sheet, I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
I'm going to clear my throat, and that means. That means there might be something interesting about to happen. All right, so the early morning fixture is Stoke Man City. Now, kind of a weird early morning fixture, right? It is,
yeah.
I guess I'm only going to have one player in this game. It looks like Aguero is fit. He's come out on Twitter and said that he's fit, so that's as good as you're going to get, right?
He was very convincing on Twitter, I will say that too.
Yeah. So I have another keeper dilemma that I'll have to solve here. I have, Man City is just, it's always a tough fixture. I mean, it's tempting to have Jack Butland because you know that he'll have a lot of saves in this game.
Yeah.
I think there's at least a chance that Leicester could keep a clean sheet. Whether I want to start Schmeichel or Butland is something I'm going to debate probably up until the last minute. I might end up just going with Butland because I think there's a decent chance that that he'll let in a goal but have six or more saves and pick up 4 points, and that's probably better than I'm going to get.
Wasn't it last season, maybe it was Stoke at Man City, where they got a 1-0 victory over City, the Diouf goal?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So maybe we could see a repeat of that performance. I mean, I sincerely doubt it.
I think this could end up being a draw, though. I don't know. I think so my prediction is 2-2, Man City-Stoke.
Wow, interesting.
It feels like this Stoke team is weird. You know, they kind of show up and then they they seem to play to the level of their competition a little bit this year, and they've pulled out a few surprising wins already. And I don't see them winning this game, but I think they could pick up a point. I don't know. It's kind of like a. I'm not basing it on a bunch of fact or anything, but I think.
Yeah, I'm going to try and not. I'm going to try and not overthink this fixture, and I'm going to go for a 3-1 City victory. I am not going to predict a clean sheet for City here.
Are you thinking about Captain Aguero for this game?
God, that is a tough question. That is part of what's fun about the urgency to get Aguero back in, is he's always such a great captain option to have.
Yeah. God, but just if you captained him, very first game week fixture, it's a 3-day game week, and if you captain him and he does nothing and goes off like in the 58th minute,
it'd be gutting. It would be gutting.
Yeah, you've got a 1-pointer, and then you have to wait until Monday afternoon to watch the Everton Crystal Palace game, where like half the league is going to be captaining Lukaku. That would just be a brutal 2-day stretch.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a tough one. I'll be at least happy to have Aguero on the field anyway.
Yeah,
let's say that.
Yeah.
All right. So next fixture, it's Arsenal hosting Sunderland. Speaking of captaincy options, as you were saying, Mesut Ozil is probably going to be the other 50%. That's not Lukaku.
Yeah, I think so. There are a lot of good captaincy options this week. I mean, I think Coutinho is a pretty interesting captaincy option too. Away to Newcastle.
And
yeah, so this game is this one's kind of a hard one to predict.
No, I'm basically probably going to say the exact same thing. And Sunderland, they have been putting the performances together the last few weeks, and it seems like Allardyce's game plan, if you could call it that, is probably starting to come together.
It's hard to think that Arsenal – I mean, I do think they'll – I would expect them to win this match, but just given how threadbare that team is right now, it looks like they won't have Cazorla or Alexis for this fixture. It looks like they're both out for at least a couple weeks.
What happened to Cazorla?
He's got a leg issue or something. I think he might actually be out indefinitely.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. So in some ways that could help Ozil, because there will I would still expect Arsenal to score in this match, and you would think that anything they did in this game would probably run through Cazorla or through Ozil, excuse me. It makes for – I would like to see Aaron Ramsey do something here as an Arsenal fan. This seems like a great chance for him to play through the center again. I don't know. I just it'd be nice if he did something, but I don't know. I think it's going to be a hard match for Arsenal.
I agree, and that does make me hesitate putting the armband on Ozil. And I also go back to the tweet we had gotten from El Magico, where Ozil's outlets are completely diminished with all these injuries, and he's not the prolific goal scorer. He's the prolific assist man.
Right.
So I guess in that sense, it's all going to come down to which Olivier Giroud shows up to this game.
Yeah, that's true. So I don't think Ozil's a bad captaincy here. I just think there might be better options.
Yeah. What about a clean sheet? Sunderland, are they going to put one past Arsenal?
That's a good question. This is not my clean sheet of the week.
Okay.
I'll say that much. Maybe I could see 2-0 or 2-1 seems like the most likely scoreline.
All right. Up next, Man United hosts West Ham. Man United.
Are you just laughing at how not fun Man United are to watch?
Perhaps I am. I mean, they're not even fun to talk about. Like, the only person that I ever think to mention is Chris Smalling when I look at United. And I can't even think of an interesting thing about Chris Smalling other than that stupid little patch of hair he has on his chin. Why doesn't he just shave that?
This Man United team is they're 1 point off the top of the league, and they are I used to like watching Man United play. I mean, they were never my favorite team by any stretch, but yeah. They used to have a lot of fire, and I don't know what is going on with this team. Maybe they need Rooney to go away. I don't know if that would change things at all. I don't know. Maybe they need Van Gaal to go away. I don't know. It's not fun.
Not necessarily leave the team, but just go someplace else.
It's so hard for them to score one goal.
Yeah.
I mean, even one single goal is such a struggle for this team.
I think this will be a pretty dull game. I mean, West Ham really lacks something without Payet. I think Lanzini is trying to marshal things in the middle of the field.
Yeah, but they just can't keep a clean sheet.
Yeah. But Lanzini, he seems to lack experience. He seems a little overwhelmed by the occasion.
Yeah.
So maybe a 1-0 win for United. I would be close to betting on a clean sheet, and I think I'm going to reserve my judgment on the clean sheet until we get through the entire fixture list. But Man United might be my pick of the week.
Okay. So that brings us to Southampton Aston Villa.
So Pele is going to be back, and he's going to be playing against the lit fart that is the Aston Villa team.
It's almost tempting to captain Virgil van Dijk in this game. Couldn't you just see him getting a goal and a clean sheet and 3 bonus points?
Oh, without a doubt. There'll be a corner kick, and Brad Guzan will come flying out, four limbs flailing, and van Dijk will just nod it past him, and it'll be beautiful.
It will be. I think Southampton wins this game like 3-0. I have some pretty deep investment in the Southampton team, and I really need Mane to be the Sadio Mane that we all know and love.
Yeah, what have you gotten out of him thus far?
Just almost nothing. Just one assist. He almost scored at the end of that Man City game, which probably would have picked up 2 bonus points from that too. But you know, whatever. You just can't look backward. It hasn't worked out well so far, but I love this fixture for him. So let's just leave it at that.
It's true. Mane has been a little lost. I mean, they are a little lost offensively generally, Southampton, but Mane just seems to roam around and pop up in very unusual.
Yeah, it was a weird places. Yeah, it was a weird game because they didn't have Pelé, and you really saw what that team was like without Pelé.
Yeah.
They just don't have the same sort of focal point, you know, in their offense. And he's so tall. He's like Giroux, you know, so tall that he can, you know, he can head down all those balls, and then he can find, you know, Tadic and Mane on the flanks.
Absolutely. All right, so I agree with you. Something to the effect of 3-0 here. Swansea, Leicester. This might be my pick for sub 8.0 goal of the week. And it's wishful thinking for Andre Ayew.
I thought this was going to be your Awkwafina pure watch game of the week.
Oh, no, this is not a pure watch for me. Well, I mean, I guess it is kind of a tantalizing fixture, but as far as purified water, just the general product of purified water sponsoring this week's Pure Watch, I'm going to reserve that for the Everton Crystal Palace game, actually.
Okay. So I think it seems like Swansea is overdue for a win. Leicester is overdue for a loss.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might be looking ahead, Leicester, because they have a lot of really tough matches coming up right after this one. So I think that this is in a mini upset of sorts, although they are home. I think that Swansea will win this game 2-1. And I do think that we will get another goal from Jamie Vardy.
And we'll see if we get another start from the game eater, Eder.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's made a difference one way or the other.
No, I mean, Tim Gomes or what's his name, Eder, it makes zero difference. They're both highly ineffective.
Their attack looked awful against Liverpool.
Yeah, the only encouraging thing about Ayew is he just runs his ass off the entire game and he's waving his hands in front of the goal, pass to me, pass to me. I think he will get one.
Yeah. Have we ever talked before about the stress that comes with watching a match, like it's kind of like near the end of a game week when all you have is one defender on that team?
Yeah.
Particularly when it's, at least when you have Klein, like he's feeding some balls in there.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like the match, I only like perk up when there's like a corner kick.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, maybe I got my chance now. but otherwise, you're just like he got, you know, Skrtel got a yellow card near the end there. And it was like, yeah, it was a good play. Like as a football play, it was the right play. But
I mean, he was kind of in that position because of Nathaniel Klein as well, who wasn't tracking back as he should have. And he left Skrtel out to dry.
Yeah, I wasn't too mad about the yellow card because it was just one of those necessary plays. And it might have saved a goal, so it might have actually saved me, you know, 4 points.
It's actually an interesting play between you and me head-to-head because on a corner kick, Skrtel goes up and Klein drops back to the center circle to prevent a counterattack. So I have no play during a corner kick.
it's the reverse.
All right, so next fixture we got Watford at home to Norwich City. This is the anti-pure watch of the week.
Yeah. God, I could. Oh man, if I had a Gallo, I'd be really tempted to captain him this game week.
Or Troy Deeney, either
one. I think it's an easy win for Watford. I'm going to predict 2-0.
If Watford wins this game, they go to 22 points. I guess that's. I was thinking like maybe Watford could guarantee safety for themselves if they win this game.
Yeah, that and like 18 more. Six. Well, I mean, I will say 20. If they have 22 points through the first 15 game weeks, they probably only need about 6 more wins, maybe only 5 more wins the rest of the season to stay up.
Yeah.
It would be stunning if Watford went down at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I would put this down to a 2-1 Watford win or maybe a 2-2 draw. I'm actually going to go with that. I'm going to go with the 2-2 draw.
How many goals from Dan Mercy Mbakani do you predict?
All 4.
Wow. 2 own goals and 2 goals.
Yeah, it'll be a very bittersweet game for some FPL manager out there.
All right, so that brings us to West Brom Spurs. Kind of an interesting match. This is at West Brom. I can almost see this being another scoreless draw.
I don't know. I don't think West Brom defense, like they were for maybe like a 3-week stretch at once this season, are a guaranteed clean sheet. And Spurs offer too much going forward, and they're a team so much on a roll. There's no way Spurs don't win this game by a margin of at least 2 goals, I think.
Wow. Okay, well, then I agree to disagree. I think this is like a 1-1 draw or a 0-0 draw.
Okay,
I just think it's going to be a tight fixture. I don't know. I guess I still feel a little unconvinced by Spurs, and you'd think a 13-game scoreless or a 13-game 13-game streak without a loss would be enough to convince me otherwise, but I'm still a little I mean, first of all, it's only like a mildly impressive streak because they have like eight draws.
Have you noticed that Boaz Myhill is like a secretly fat guy?
Myhill looks a lot like our friend Megan's ex-boyfriend Ken.
He does.
And that's what I think of every time I see him.
Who is also kind of a secretly fat guy. It gives hope to all of us normals out here that professional athletes, they're actually just like us. They have to pull their goalie shirts on like the sausage casings that they are.
This is very true.
All right, so we agree to disagree on this. I think Spurs, it's going to be a slow burn, but then Spurs are going to blow it out of the water.
Okay, so then we think the next match is my clean sheet of the week. I am predicting a Kurt Zouma clean sheet in this match, and it's Chelsea versus Bournemouth. I know this is not the most original clean sheet prediction of all time, but I'm sticking with it. It's been my theme all week has been Kurt Zouma.
Coming off of three goals against Everton, Bournemouth just scorching, scorching hot.
That is true. That is true. I'm really on the fence about the Hazard thing because I think that it is really, you know, it would be an incredible leap of faith. It is not a move that you would make based – it'd be a move based on just how he looked in the last couple of game weeks and the fact that he is playing more, you know, more centrally. I don't know why he
hasn't scored more. Cheeky punt territory.
Yeah, it is, except he's so expensive. We'll see. It's a great run for them. I don't think this will be like a 5-0 game, although Bournemouth have a habit of allowing – I mean, I don't know when the last time they haven't allowed at least three goals in a game. I'm going to predict a 2-0 Chelsea win. Yeah. I think Bournemouth will end the streak and allow less than three goals.
Well, if you go back, let's see, a couple weeks, it was just that game against Newcastle. They only let in one goal against Newcastle. And we could easily compare Chelsea to Newcastle this season, I think. So I'm going to predict a 1-0 win for Chelsea.
Okay. All right. Well, and actually, Bournemouth have actually allowed two goals, one goal, and two goals in the three game weeks that came before this one. So it hasn't been quite as bad as I said.
Shockingly not as bad, given how decimated that defense
is. It came after two consecutive five goal drubbings.
Yeah. All right, Newcastle, Liverpool. You have to really like Liverpool here, right?
Yep, definitely like Liverpool here. I think that Coutinho is a very tempting captain's option this week. And I think that
What about Firmino? No love for Firmino?
Yeah, he's just not consistent enough.
Yeah, the data's not in yet.
Yeah, so I think let's go 3-1 Liverpool. I think I could see Newcastle scoring a goal at home.
Oh, without a doubt, there is definitely a goal from Newcastle coming here. I agree with you on that one. And here's my purified water peer watch of the week: Everton versus Crystal Palace. I think this is going to be a crazy cagey affair. And it could be one where they just trade goals back and forth for 90 minutes.
God, I feel I feel very differently about this game.
Oh, we're at odds at a lot of these fixtures.
Yeah, to me, this is an easy Everton win. I think they're going to win something like 3-0. And this is also my sub 8 million goal scorer pick of the week. Gerard Deulofeu, going with my own player this week. I think he finally scores a goal this game week.
Yeah, I like that. That seems like easy money to me. Not as easy as Andre Ayew against Leicester.
Yeah.
So I guess I still have to pick my clean sheet, and I'm going to go with Man United against West Ham.
Okay, I like that one. Who's your goal scorer of the week?
Andre Ayew.
Ah, Ayew, that's right. Okay.
You can buy for a mere £7.1 million.
There you go. Possible one-week punt after Sanchez.
All right, Josh, do you agree to meet me on this podcast next week to go through and review the fixtures of Game Week 15 and optimize Game Week 16?
I feel like we've talked so long, we're already into next week.
That's great. So I think that'll do it for us. But do remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. Find us on Stitcher Radio. And where can people contact us, Josh?
They can find us on Twitter, and they can find us all over the place. just Google Always Cheating. You'll find us pretty easily.
Awesome. All right. Well, Poku forever.
Hail cheaters.
And good luck this weekend, Josh.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon. Same to you.